So you've been in therapy for years. Maybe you've been in 12-step recovery for years. You've read the books, you know your attachment style, you understand your trauma, and yet you're still waiting to actually feel different. You're still stuck in the same patterns you've been stuck in for a really, really long time. And listen, if I am describing you here, no shame at all, because for a very, very long time, this was me. And then I realized that all of my healing had been from the neck up. I had never actually gotten into my body, and I learned that somatic healing, nervous system regulation, it's not optional. Like, it's not just a suggestion. It is a requirement if you actually want to heal from a dysfunctional childhood. And what do you know? Once I actually started doing that work, I finally started making headway on the patterns that I was starting to think that I was going to be stuck in for the rest of my life. And so I built a course, y'all. It is called Safe Within, and it is everything that has actually worked for me all in one 7-week life journey. It's 3 parts. In the first part, we are going to actually learn how to feel safe in our bodies through practices rooted in somatic experience. Experiencing and polyvagal theory. Then in part 2, through somatic parts work, we are going to get to know the parts of us that are keeping us stuck in places that we don't want to be stuck in. And then in part 3, this is about actually learning how to feel good as a felt experience in your body. Because let's be honest, for so many of us, good feelings are deeply uncomfortable. Calm feels unsafe, joy feels suspicious, and we're going to do something about that, okay? And here's something I want to be really honest about. One of the biggest reasons I struggle to do this work for so long is that I could not get myself to do it alone. Like every day I would tell myself, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And then what do you know, at the end of the day, I had not done X, Y, and Z. This was day after day after day, year after year after year. And so part of what I built into this intentionally is the accountability piece. We meet live, you show up. You can't just talk yourself out of it the way that you can when you're trying to do this stuff on your own. And listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that you're going to be perfectly healed after 7 weeks, but what I do think is that you are going to feel a hell of a lot more connected to your body. You are going to feel much safer actually being in your body, and you're going to walk away with tools that you will use for years, if not for the rest of your damn life. And I want to make this very, very clear. You do not need to have any prior experience with IFS, with parts work, somatic work to do this course. None. You can show up having never heard of any of these words before, and you will be taken care of. I will guide you through every single step. So we start July 1st. When you sign up, you also get 2 months free in the shit show with access to all of our weekly support groups and everything else that we got going on in there. So you, yes, you, yes, you, the person who knows that they need to sign up, the person who is currently in their head right now, thinking about how I need to do this course, get out of your damn head and get into your damn body. Take that little hand of yours, get on your computer or on your phone, and just sign the hell up already. Go to adultchildpodcast.com/safewithin, adultchildpodcast.com/safewithin. And if you have any questions at all, feel free to email me directly at Andrea@adultchildpodcast.com. Do it. Do it now. Time heals all wounds is a myth when it comes to trauma. Trauma lives in your body, not the calendar. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. What you're holding on to, just let it all go. What's making you slow now, just let it all go. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows or chachos. So my the software that I use, Descript, to edit my audio and transcribes my audio. So it always transcribes adult child as old child. But now for the first time this a few days ago, it transcribed shit shows as chachos. So welcome back to old child. Ahoy, my dear chachos. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea, and don't worry, I'm not going to make that a thing. Okay, I'm not going to make it a thing. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I'm clearly a total incomplete shit show. I'm an adult child of a dysfunctional family who suffered complex trauma during her childhood and realized that after dating 2 alcoholics named Brian back to back with many years of sobriety under my belt. If you want to hear that whole story, unfiltered, go listen to my very first episode. It is required listening around here. Also, if you're new around here, go back to the beginning and listen to like the first 10 or so episodes so you can hear my story. I think it'll make all of this a more enjoyable experience for you. And yeah, welcome aboard this hot mess of a ship where we talk about what the hell to do when you realize that your childhood screwed you up more than you initially thought. We curse here. You've been warned. And before we get into today's guest, real quick, I just want to let you know that today is the last day. This is June 10th when you're listening to this. Okay, today is the last day that you can get early bird pricing for Safe Within. This is my 7-week live somatic healing journey for finding self-energy. This is my very first solo course that I built entirely myself. This is all the shit that has worked for me. This is all the shit that I wish I did when I first started my healing journey. And you can't get this anywhere else, okay, for a number of reasons, but this is a one-of-a-kind experience that you can have with me. This is a three-part journey. First, we are going to be regulating, grounding. We are going to learn how to feel calm, curious, and compassion in our bodies, not just in our heads. Then we are going into somatic parts work using this method called RIM that has been a huge game changer for me. And we're going to be looking at connecting with the parts of us that are keeping us stuck in places that we don't want to be stuck, in particular, the inner critic and the shame part of you. And then the last part of the journey is all about feeling all that good shit, actually experiencing feeling good, experiencing self-energy, learning how to embody the 8 C's of self as a felt experience and not just a concept in your head. So you, yes, you sign up for this shit, okay? You can go to adultchildpodcast.com/safewithin to get all the information that you need to sign up. Feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions, but I mean it. You want to partake in this, okay? So today, folks, we are diving deep with Valerie Rubin. So she is a trauma-informed somatic coach. She is the host of the Anxiety Recovery Podcast. And we are diving into some topics that I know many of you can relate to. I know they're definitely ones that I relate to the most. Fear of abandonment and anxious attachment. And you know, I shared this in a shit show group recently. You know, when I first embarked on this whole childhood trauma healing journey, adult child healing journey, I thought that my only issues were the things that were showing up in my romantic relationships. And, you know, that was just the loudest. And boy, who knew how many issues there was actually in there? But this is the stuff that has caused me so much pain. Abandonment wounds are no joke. They are absolutely brutal. And so we are going to be talking about how it lives in your body and why understanding it is never enough to change it, and what somatic work actually does that years of talk therapy can't. We're also talking about chronic pain, hypnotherapy, narcissistic dads, coming to terms with the quote-unquote safer parent, all that shit. So let's get on with the damn show, shall we? But first, let's talk about why you, yes, you need to damn the Join Shit Show. This is my online support community where you can connect with other fellow shit shows who are doing the damn work to heal. This is a support system at your fingertips, in your back pocket. What you will gain from being in a community of people who understand what you're going through, where you can come and share all the shit you're struggling with, that you feel embarrassed to share with anybody else because you think that they'll think that you're nuts or crazy or pathetic. To hear other people who know exactly how you feel, to feel seen, heard, and understood in a way that you haven't experienced before, I'm telling you, it is an absolutely crucial and fundamental element of this healing journey. This is something that you can't get, you know, sitting in your therapist's office. Now, therapy is amazing. Well, I mean, when you have a good therapist, therapy can be really shitty too, if you have one who doesn't know what they're doing. But what you can get on the shit show ship is something that you can't get anywhere else. This is relational trauma. We heal relational trauma through safe relationships. And this is where we do it, is on the shit show ship for less than a damn dollar a day. So you, yes, you, the person that's been wanting to join for forever, the people that have been listening since the beginning, let's just do it already, okay? Go to adultchildpodcast.com/shitshow. Next, give me a follow on Insta, on TikTok, at Adult Child Pod, and last but not least, whatever you do, please, please, give me a 5-star rating on Apple, on Spotify. Thank you. Love you all.
We'll start where I always like to start, which is, when was the moment that you realized that your child had screwed you up more than you initially thought?
I love it. I would say when I started to develop chronic pain, I was around like early 20s. And there was like no medical reasoning for all this pain. Like, it started with chronic headaches, chronic neck pain, chronic back pain, IBS. I started getting like cystic acne on my face. And I, sooner rather than later, I felt like I was in my early 20s living in a 9-year-old's body. And then I started, like, I was already doing talk therapy for 5 years. You know, I was really anxious because of this chronic pain and just very anxious in general. So I think once the physical pain kind of came in and I was like diving deep into, you know, my subconscious beliefs and found hypnotherapy, that's when I was like, oh yeah, like my childhood was super fucked. It screwed me up way more than I anticipated. So that was when I first realized that and realized, oh, this is all to do with my upbringing. This has nothing to do with the food I'm eating or my posture or all these things that like traditional methods were just not working for me.
So, had you been struggling with pain for a while, or did it just like come on really fast?
It was like cumulatively. So it was about 6 years of just like it getting worse and worse. I was seeing doctors, I was seeing chiropractors, nothing was like, I changed my diet, I even went on medication, and just nothing got better until I tried hypnotherapy. And then within 6 months, the chronic pain was completely gone. The anxiety that was really fueling the chronic pain, that became a lot more manageable. And then I discovered like somatic therapy. And then that's kind of where I dove even deeper to like the trauma, where was it stuck in my body, all of that, because we can't talk our way out of our anxiety, out of our trauma. Like people say, you just need to let go of your childhood, or you just need to forgive your parents when you're still holding on to all this trauma that's now causing you to feel like anxious in your relationships and anxiously attached in your relationships. And it's like, yeah, everything all stems back to all the emotions that were unfelt that are stuck in your body.
How did you view your childhood prior to that?
Yeah, even as a child, I knew like, hey, something is wrong. Like, this isn't normal. Because I had like my aunt and my uncle, like their marriage was very healthy. And I was like best friends with my cousins, and their childhood was very normal for the most part. And like my grandparents were very loving. So I just knew like something was deeply wrong with my childhood. And you know, I grew up with an autistic brother and a father who was a narcissist. So it's like a lot of chaos and a lot of problems that I already knew, just despite that this was very different compared to someone else's childhood.
And prior to the chronic pain, like, did you struggle at all, like when you were a teenager or?
Oh yeah. As a teenager, that's when a lot more anxiety and just like a lot of pressure to perform well, to get that academic validation. Like, I think that's really when the chronic pain started simmering and started to creep in, because it's like I would study for like, you know, 12 hours a day because I really wanted to impress my dad and get that praise. And I had ADHD. Now I'm like, that was just a survival adaptation to, you know, the chaos in my home. But that was like a big turning point. Yeah, in my teens, I definitely struggled with low self-worth, a lot of anxiety, and just this feeling of once I get the job, once I get into college, once I'm in this happy relationship, that's when the anxiety and my mental health issues are going to go away. And even now in my late 20s, and even just friends in my 30s, it's like a lot of people who have trauma unconsciously have that when X happens, then I can finally feel peace. And it's like, that's how you know, hey, I most likely have an anxious attachment and I have had trauma because I don't feel that safety internally.
That's interesting. So you think that this specifically the when X happens, then I'll be okay. You think that specifically correlates to an anxious attachment style?
I think it can be toward really any type of insecure attachment. It doesn't even have to be anxious attachment, but a lot of people who have anxious attachment, they're like, if my partner has a bad day, mm-hmm. I'm having a bad day. So a lot of business owners, it's like, oh, if my business is doing not as high as I would like, now I'm having a bad day. It's like, I need things externally in order to feel safe.
Yeah, that's a good, that's a really interesting point. Yeah, I wonder, avoid an attacher, speak up and let me know. Because I could see that. Yeah, it's much more having your mood, your livelihood, your well-being, your worth tied to. I mean, I obviously relate, you know, I thought that as soon as I would get into a relationship that, you know, that was like my ticket to happiness. But like, I wonder, because like, there are people though who are, avoidance, but they might be really, they might be workaholics. And like, I could see an avoidant feeling that way about their work.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So how did you discover hypnotherapy?
Yeah. So honestly, I was just scrolling on my TikTok and I met this hypnotherapist who specialized in anxiety. And at the time I was doing my bachelor's in psychology and I was just like, I've done talk therapy for years. Like, let me just try it out. And it was just completely random. And she completely changed my life. And I was like, okay, I know talk therapy just hasn't helped me get to the root of my issues. Like, people need something deeper. So then I ditched my plan of getting a PhD and then I decided to train and become a hypnotherapist. And then I discovered somatics. And then that's kind of like where I went with that.
And so what was the process? Like, because there's a lot of different types of hypnotherapy, right?
So essentially, first, that my hypnotherapist had me do this like guided induction with body scanning. It's essentially just hypnotizing you to feel a bit more relaxed. And then we kind of start with regression and finding, okay, where in your life did you first start feeling anxious? And then I remember like whatever that first scene was. And then it was like, well, what belief did you make about yourself based on this scene? And for me, it was like that I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. And then it was like, we went to another scene that was like, where did you first acquire that belief? And then it's like meeting that inner child who didn't feel good enough and didn't feel worthy, giving that young part what she needed back then. And then we did some guided imagery where I was bringing her in the present with me, showing her that she's safe now. And inner child work can be very, very powerful because your brain doesn't know the difference between real and imagined. So when you're rescuing this 4-year-old little girl, your brain thinks that that's completely real. And it's incredibly powerful, the releases that I had through that.
Did it also include like listening to affirmation recording?
Did you? Yeah, afterward. Yeah. So you do the hypnotherapy session and then you, like my hypnotherapist made me like a customed hypnosis recording with like affirmations. And I listened to it for like 30 days. And that really rewires your subconscious.
So I did this and I had a really bad experience.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
I want to hear about it. Yeah. And I can tell you probably what she did wrong.
No, I mean, I know what she did wrong. What she did wrong. I was in a trauma response still. This was in 2023. I told this story on the podcast. So I took a long break. And when I came back in September, I told this part of the story when I, my first episode back. So I had met this guy and he was wonderful. And it was like, finally, I'm not attracted to, you know, somebody who's like an active alcoholic. But he was going through a divorce and it just was not going to be the right time. So I did what I never had done before. And I cut it off. But I mean, I still was going into like emotional flashbacks. It revealed to me that there was still abandonment wounds in there that I hadn't worked through. And so I had just had this woman on the podcast and she did this. And I said, yeah, I want to do this with you. And so we started to do the work, but like, it was only like a week or two after I had cut it off with this guy. And I was still very dysregulated. And so we ended up doing the guided, you know, meditation things. And then she created this hypnosis tape for me to listen to. And like 85% of it was good, but like 10% of it was talking about a relationship. And like for somebody like me, that just shouldn't have been in it at all. Basically, what I wanted to specifically work on were that I realized still how much I felt like a relationship was going to be my ticket to happiness. And that was like, you know, the only thing that would ever make me feel eventually fulfilled. So that was specifically what we were working on. And so there was just a few things that were included in that hypnosis that were pertaining to being in a relationship eventually. And it really, really triggered me. And I told her that I was getting triggered by it. And she just told me like, no, that's just like your subconscious resisting.
No, no.
Yeah.
Oh my God. No,
yeah.
Andrea.
So then she was like, so then I just listened to it like one more time. And like, I could tell, and I was already like in such a raw form. I was already so just dysregulated. And then that just like really sent me spinning out. But it all happened the way that it was supposed to. Like, I know it happened for a reason, and it happened like so that I could be able to heal. But yeah, like it was not good.
Yeah, you have to be personally, if someone is healing from an abandonment wound and healing from that belief of like a relationship is my ticket to happiness, like that would be the last thing I would put in there.
Exactly.
Unless they were like, I really want that to be in there. And they felt good about that when I was speaking about that.
Mm-hmm.
It just sounds like she didn't meet you where you're at. And I want to preface this, like a lot, not everyone, some can be very trauma-informed, but why I kind of stopped promoting that I did hypnotherapy, a lot of people can think it's a quick fix when it's most likely not if we have an abandonment wound or we have attachment wounds. And I do protocols before like diving into the somatic work or any sort of hypnotherapy, because in regression, it can bring up a lot of repressed material or emotions that we've suppressed that our body may not be ready yet for. And so it's like, I do a lot of nervous system regulation, starting to build safety in the body first so that we start to feel good again. Before even jumping into that. And especially if it's like, that was so raw.
It was so fresh.
And
granted, I had done a lot of work on myself at that point, but I had yet to really do much inner child work. I had yet to do any somatic work. But I didn't know what I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wanting to feel better. So I probably could have been more aware of maybe we need to wait a few weeks before but I just wanted to feel better, you know?
Sure.
And then also I remember too doing the hypnosis, and then like, you know, however it's supposed to end, I just remember I didn't feel any sort of closure or like resolution around it. You know what I mean? Like I didn't feel like we had really gotten where we needed to be. And so she clearly wasn't able to tell that how dysregulated I was. I mean, granted it was over Zoom. I don't have any hard feelings towards her or anything, but yeah, when you're working with abandonment wounds, we're not going to be able to wrap this up in a pretty bow. And whatever she told me, like 6 or 8 weeks, like I should have known. And I wasn't talking to I just didn't have an appointment with my other therapist. And so I hadn't run it by her, and she would have told me you need to wait until you're more regulated, but it worked out fine. But I mean, It was a bunch of things that happened, and that was just part of it. But I was just like in a spiral for about a year. Yeah, it was fine. Yeah, then that like led to like getting in a really toxic relationship, and but that had to happen. It had to happen in order for me to heal, you know. But yeah, I didn't have a great experience.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people who are in this work really need to be more trauma-informed. And
No
that's
kidding.
like how I got into somatic work. Because people who were, and like why I a bit more like transitioned into somatic therapy and somatic work is because people who like, I guess like weren't feeling that resolution or were still really chronically anxious, it's because they were still trauma bonded or they had a lot of abandonment wounds that were unhealed from having an anxious attachment. And so it's like when we start to really work on that, work on building nervous system safety and starting to learning how to self-soothe and the co-regulation from me, or this could be a coach or a therapist, like that's what really helps to start to build more of that security and secure attachment over time.
And was it like your own experience, like feeling like you needed to go further, or like what led you down that path?
Yeah. So I finished my hypnotherapy training. I was loving life. I thought I was healed and great and da, da, da. And then I got into my next relationship and it was in fact a trauma bond. Things moved pretty quickly. I mean, I was like, he treats me like a queen. Everything was going really well.
When was the first red flag and what was it?
Ooh, the first one.
And what was your pattern up until this point?
For me at that point, they were all pretty like avoidant because I thought at the time, oh, I'm anxiously attached. Da, da, da. And yes, I was that, but I was also extremely avoidant to myself. Mm-hmm. And to my own emotions. And so they were like all pretty much like avoidant and it just wouldn't end well.
And were you the golden child to your dad was a narcissist. Oh, yes. Were you the golden child?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And when did you wake up to him?
To my ex or my.
Your dad. Like when did you realize that he was a narcissist?
I actually was seeing a talk therapist for 5 years and about when I was 18, she was like, it's funny because when I started therapy, it wasn't even because of my dad. It was because I was cutting off one of my best friends who was a male who like, I really loved his friendship, but I was like, yeah, I think I need to heal from this. And then we started talking about my family dynamics and she's like, yeah, I think your dad is a narcissist. And I was like, oh, that checks.
How did your relationship with your dad change from that?
Big ways. So after that, I was in college. So I was living about an hour away from my family. And I just started to become more distant and I started to see his patterns. And then it got to a point where I was seeing a lot of how much he was controlling my mom. And I was just like, I need to go no contact at this point. Like he was just causing so much stress on me and I just didn't want to be around it anymore. So I actually went no contact for about a year and a half. And
did he lash out?
Oh yeah, he was not happy about it. I mean, he was not happy about it. My parents also like separated during that time, not for very long, only for a few months, and then they got back together. But yeah, I just knew after that point that our relationship would just never be the same, you know? And yeah, that was like really, really painful. Like one of the biggest pains in my life that I had to go through. Now we're not no contact. Like it was about a year and a half later. My grandfather passed away. I, of course, wanted to go to the funeral, and so we reunited, and then because I did a lot of healing work, he wasn't really triggering me, surprisingly, and then it's like we just have a more distant relationship, and we just don't talk as much. And like I told Andrea kind of at the beginning, like I live in Mexico in this moment. And so there's just a lot more distance. And so he just knows, like, if you bother me enough, like, you'll just get blocked. So I think he just knows not to press on that. You know, he also, like, 6 years ago at this point, he, like, got an autism diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that also is interesting. He presents in different ways than other people who I've met who have been on the spectrum. Some people say that the narcissistic tendencies are a way to like mask for the autism.
Interesting. I've never heard that before. Like social skills or like how so?
He like one of his hyperfixations is successful people. Like he just talks about his friends who are successful, his friends' kids that are successful. And then he's also like very obsessed with trains and technology. Other ways he masks, I think it's just like that inflated type of ego.
Huh. That's interesting. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I could see that with the hyperfixation. I'm trying to think of like from like an ego perspective, if I've ever like really come across somebody who's autistic that I've thought has presented like with an ego, probably. That's interesting. So then did anything shift between them or is it still kind of the same power dynamics?
For them currently, it's still the same type of power dynamics. I mean, they've been married now 36 years. So like they're fully trauma bonded. Like they just meet each other's wounded needs perfectly. I think like my mom's wound is like, oh, she's the caretaker, you know, oh, I feel valued when I'm needed. Mm-hmm. And then he feeds off of that mm-hmm. and that control. And then my dynamic shifted a little bit with my mom. At one point I was like, do I cut both of them off? Like when I went no contact with my dad, and then I just didn't end up doing that because she was supportive enough to me, but I think she couldn't wrap her mind around it. I mean, I think she's purely like in denial because, you know, they're just so codependent and trauma bonded. And so it's like anyone, people talk a lot about toxic relationships and they're like, why don't you leave? But it's like, if your abandonment wound is bigger than the pain of staying in the relationship, the abandonment wound and that emotion is always going to win.
Yeah. And I think same thing with my parents. I think that it's really difficult when you're in such a codependent relationship like that. If one person tries to start climbing out of the hole, the other person grabs their leg and pulls them back down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It was really sad to witness, you know, when he did the very classical things of like hoovering her back, you know, with a letter saying he was sorry that he was going to change. But like, he's of course the same person. And that's just where they're at. And I had to do a lot of therapy around accepting that that's the reality and that I can't change that.
Have you come to terms with the impact that your mom has had on you?
Oh yeah. Yeah. People talk a lot about like one parent is a narcissist and the other one's quote unquote perfect.
Or but less harm. Like, yeah. The safer parent.
The safer parent. That I think was like, once I kind of worked through a lot of that father wound stuff, ooh, like the mother, once I started learning, oh, like she was just as much a part of it as him, that was deeply painful. Like, I feel like even more painful than the father wound. Yeah. Like in the beginning of this year, I went through like a breakup with my best friend. We weren't like romantically involved, mm-hmm. of course. But like when that happened, it really just like ripped the fuck open of my mother wound. And processing that was really, really painful. The friendship breakup, it wasn't even about that. It was like, she was just the object of that mother wound. I already did a lot of healing around the mother wound and was doing, at one point I did like EMDR, and I of course did a lot of brain spotting around my abandonment wounds before the friendship breakup, but just remembering the memories of how much she let slide and denied abuse, denied what was happening, that was the really painful part. And now, you know, after looking at it, after looking at everything, it's just like, yeah, you're just deeply in denial and you're just an inner child encompassing a 60-year-old's body because he's your only source of safety because you haven't built that within yourself, essentially.
What do you know about their upbringings?
Yeah, these are great questions. My mom's upbringing, I think for her, she was always a very sensitive child, and her mom really favored her sister. And I think that really implanted, like, you're not good enough in her. Mm-hmm. And I think my dad is just a pure manifestation of that. And then with my, and she was just always trying to prove her worth to my grandmother. And so, yeah, there, then you have a narcissist who's always criticizing you and you need to prove your worth or prove that, you know, you're good and smart and capable. And then for him, I think, honestly, I think like his mom did not want to be a mom. Like people say a grandparent, like how they show up is how they kind of acted like as a parent. And my grandma, like my dad's mom, like I love her, but she's just extremely avoidant. And she only has told him that she loved him like a few times in his life, very late in life. And then his dad was very cold and very unavailable. And he didn't say I love you to my dad until he died about 5 years ago. And then like they also favored his two sisters over him. But my grandma just said like he was just always very difficult and different. Because even like his two sisters are very different compared to him. And they're not autistic. And they both have thriving careers and like are very loving. You know, no one's perfect, but it's just very different. So I can see how my parents were magnetized toward each other and how they've lasted so long.
And is your brother older or younger?
So I have two brothers, actually. Okay. They're twins. The one has autism. They're both like 2.5 years older than me, but everyone would think that like I am the eldest daughter, and all content that talks about eldest daughter,
you relate to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I really relate to it because at least for my one brother who has autism, he is going to be 30, but he is 5. Like cognitively. So I've always kind of resonated with, I'm not actually the youngest. And then I feel like I just emotionally matured faster than my other brother. And I just was always, you know, the golden child, the perfect one, the responsible one. And so, yeah.
So I'm assuming like if he's that, it seems like he has like pretty severe autism.
Yeah, he's more like toward the lower middle end.
Okay.
Of the spectrum.
So he obviously got the diagnosis pretty early on in his life. Well, I think that's really interesting. The twin dynamic, are they identical or fraternal?
Fraternal. They're very different.
I'm wondering what that twin experience, like, because it's not a typical twin experience. So like a lot of the attention, I'm sure, went to that brother. And then I'm wondering, like, what role did his twin play? Was he kind of scapegoated, or what were the dynamics there?
Well, great question. Yeah, he was definitely the scapegoat. I mean, I was a little bit, but I was more the golden child. But yeah, the one without autism, he was definitely the scapegoat. He got a big brunt of the abuse, like, from my dad. But yeah, the twins, like, they have always been very close. And, you know, obviously a dynamic, it's going to be different with twins or, like, people who are both neurotypical or on the neurotypical spectrum. But they've always been very close. Like, Brandon, the one who's autistic, he's very extroverted. He loves everybody. He's super, super tall, and he's a bit, like, overweight. And he didn't have glasses for most of his life. And then the other one is, like, 5'6", very into fitness, you know, really strong, you know, 5'6". And he's just very reserved and has very different coping mechanisms. So it's very interesting to see the different dynamics.
Was a lot of your mom's focus on Brandon?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of it was on Brandon and, like, my dad. It's just like, yeah. And then for me growing up, it's like, I learned to be perfect. I learned to make myself small, learn to make my needs small, not add to the chaos. And that's been something I've really intentionally worked on, you know, because that really trickled into my relationships and why I was attracting all these avoidant men.
Mm-hmm. I had one more question, then we'll get back to your relationship. What was I going to ask?
Yeah.
Have you had any direct conversations with your mom about your childhood? Like, as things have come up, have you ever had conversations with her?
I have. I think, like, even just a few times we've just talked about certain things, like pertaining to my brother Brandon. And I think, like, at one point she started, like, crying, and she was like, I did the best that I could. So it's just kind of like, I know she's, like, to have a real deep conversation with her would really cause her to
have to confront a lot of shame.
And I don't think she will be ready for that. When I went no contact and they were separated, for, you know, those first few weeks, I mean, they were married, you know, 30 years at that point. And then to be like, oh, we're separated. Like, she moved out of her house and left her apartment. And she was, you know, my mom has always been more like toxic positivity side. And she was like suicidal. She was like, oh my God, I feel like I'm dying. But that's really just touching on the preverbal wound and the body going through trauma bond withdrawals. And it's like, yeah, for her to confront that would cause her to, like, break her psyche a little bit and, like, break her ego. But we have talked about it. And even, like, I wrote a book, like, I partook in a book and was a co-author. And I asked her, like, years prior, because I knew I wanted to write a book. I was like, hey, like, I'm going to talk a little bit about my childhood. Like, is that okay? And I knew I was going to start a podcast as well. And I was like, is that okay? And she was like, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Like, it's your life. You know, I'm sure she knows that what happened to us three siblings, like, were wrong. But for her to actually come to terms with that would be really
hurtful. It's too much shame. There's too much shame for her to confront it. Yeah.
Yeah. And she did at one point, like, she was seeing a therapist when, like, they got separated. And then her therapist was like, this, what you've went through is emotional abuse. And, like, da 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 da, check, check, check. And then she switched therapists. And it's like, yep, the psyche's like, nope, we're not ready to do that. Like, we're not ready to actively confront everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally can relate.
Yeah.
Okay. So would you say that you were drawn mostly to avoidance, but, or, like, was it also, like, narcissistic types, like love bombing and stuff like that?
So all of my exes were pretty just more like unavailable/avoidant, but then the one that changed everything, he was a covert narcissist. He was almost like both my parents, like, their worst traits
put together, like,
the perfect cocktail for healing, truly. And Yeah. So things.
So the first red flag I asked.
Oh, the first red flag. I would say the first one, I would say, like, this was when we were dating for about a month. And so we were dating for about a month, and then he met my best friend and her boyfriend at the time. And he was saying, like, they were like family. And it was only the first time they hung out with each other. And that's weird. And my best friend was like, that's weird. And, you know, it kind of started with just a lot of love bombing. And for me, like, it felt good to those neglect wounds. Mm-hmm, at the time.
Of course.
Yeah. And so that was like a big red flag. So then it was like the love bombing. And then things moved pretty quickly. Like, we moved in together, like, after 4 months of being together, which I'm like, if I could go back, man, I would change it. But it's too late now. It's okay.
Yeah, I've learned. To.
You learn. Yeah. Yep. You learn. And then as soon as I moved in, it was like a flip of the switch. It was like
right away.
Yes. Criticizing. He was very like OCD like with cleaning. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with me. I hate cleaning. I'm just gonna be so honest. Like, I don't like to clean. Like, you know, I do it if when I need to, But yeah, and that's what really started it. And it was just like small and small and small digs. And then it was just like high highs and very low lows. And like he had like a weed addiction. And just like he never, like towards the end, he just like never wanted to spend time with me and just like always wanted more and more and more space. And then like we were seeing a couple's therapist, and at one point she asked him,
how long had you been together, like, at that point?
At that point we were together.
You're like 5 months.
Almost, no, almost a year at that point. And then the therapist was like, well, you realize you have to spend time with your girlfriend, right? And then like, and then he was just like, yeah, I just don't think this is working out. And then like, that was it. But yeah, that, and I just remember my therapist being like, he was a covert narcissist. And I was like, wow. She's like, this was a trauma bond. And she was like, no dating for 6 months, period. Like, no hookup. Not that I've never really been, that was never one of my trauma responses, like hypersexuality. But yeah. She was like, no hookups, no talking, no flirting, nothing. And I just remember the withdrawals were so awful. Yeah. And that's when I started to learn more about nervous system regulation, processing my emotions. And I was doing, I was processing my emotions every single day religiously. And then also doing vagus nerve exercises 3 times a day to just help my body restabilize to feel safe again, because when you're in a trauma bond or a toxic relationship, the nervous system learns like ups and downs, and it's very toxic to the nervous system. And so it's super destabilizing. So now your body is looking for the next dopamine hit. And so once you start to re-regulate, that's when your nervous system learns and comes back to homeostasis, learns to build that safety from within. And I just remember like a few months of doing that, I was like, wow, I feel like I can actually self-soothe. And I feel like I'm in my adult body. Like, this is incredible. And it was really, really confronting. But I was like, yeah, this is not about my ex. This has everything to do with those unhealed wounds from childhood.
What does processing your emotions every day look like? What does that mean?
Yeah. So it first starts with noticing, okay, if you're anxious or dysregulated or you're craving this person, where are you starting to notice that craving in your body? Maybe I feel that as heat in my chest. Okay, I'm just going to witness it. You know, maybe I stay with it for 30 seconds. And people who are trauma survivors or you've experienced emotional neglect, your body was never attuned to emotionally as a child. So what ends up happening is people start to fear their sensations and fear their emotions. So something that I teach is called pendulation. So we want to dip our toe into that anxiety or activation. Yep. So I would stay with that for about 30 seconds, find a spot in my body that felt even 1% more safe. Then I'd focus on that for about 30 seconds and then go back and forth. Then typically I would do either some somatic shaking or some breath work to kind of just release more of the charge. And then I would end with speaking to my inner child. What does this young part need in this moment? Usually I would have like some self-holds in there, rocking. And, you know, doing that consistently, this young part, she started to learn, you are my parent now. I don't need relief from my ex or from things externally anymore.
Yeah. And I think like word to wise that like, if you have to go to a couples counselor and you've only been dating for a year, it's probably not a good sign, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I remember my best friend was actually like quite concerned. I was like, yeah, we're seeing a couples therapist. And she's like, a couples therapist? What? She's like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, like, because for me at the time, I was like, oh, he's choosing to work on this. He's
yes. Da, da, da. See, he really cares.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, God. It's like, no, honey, no.
That's so funny. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess thankfully, like he made it easy for you to get out though.
Oh yeah. Thank God. And then like his ex actually found like after me, they dated like, after me. Yeah. She found me on the internet. She like actually like talked to me and she was like telling me all these things about the relationship and like what happened.
Was she still with him at the time?
No, they like broke up, but it was really bad. Like he was even worse to her. And then after that, I started to also understand like he had deep problems, you know, that I was attracted to him, I was attracted to him, but you know, it's like, we want to blame, but it's like, at the end of the day, I was attracted to him from these unhealed wounded places. And it's so unconscious. Like we have something in our brain called neuroception and that lives in our nervous system. It's like our body has this subconscious
these sensors
that's saying this is safe and this is not safe. So your parent was unavailable, I'm going to find safety in that. So that's why a lot of clients tell me toxic relationships feel so magnetizing, even though I consciously know that's not what I want. And then healthy partners look very boring. Mm-hmm. And so it's like when we start to build that internal safety and we start to become that secure parent and then also start to rewire the nervous system and with even healthy connections with showing, okay, even like starting with a friend or starting with a coach, starting to share a need, starting to share a desire, starting to share a boundary. And it's like, now your nervous system is learning, this is what's safe now. This is what's normalized. And then it's like, when you see these unavailable men, you're now repulsed by them. Your wounds aren't getting so poked at and triggered as much.
And you're maybe not drawn to them.
The wound still gets triggered or touched, but maybe it doesn't take over you as much and you're able to still be in your true self or your adult body long enough to be like, yeah, that's actually not what I want.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's unrealistic of me to think that my abandonment wounds would ever go away completely. But I was sharing this in my community the other day about how maybe for the first 5 years of my sobriety, I remember feeling so much shame about if I were to date somebody that wasn't also sober. Like I remember being so embarrassed or afraid to share that I was sober. And like now I don't give a shit. And then that too, I'm totally okay with sharing like, listen, like I have CPTSD. And I've been through the experience a few times, but like I was dating somebody last year and I remember it was like the first day where it was like five or six hours went by of like not responding, you know, to the text and just, it does help to know, like I'm in an emotional flashback right now. This isn't real, but it doesn't make the feeling go away. But just to be able to get through that, get to the other side of it, you know, then I heard from him and now this is a different experience than what I've had in the past before, right? It's like, okay, this person was with their kids, you know, they got back to me. the next time it happened, I didn't feel that way. But I also too, like, I'm totally open to of sharing, like, hey, this is my deal, you know, like this might happen. I think that we have to be willing to be honest about that kind of stuff. And I don't feel any sort of shame about sharing any of that stuff now.
Oh, good. And yeah, absolutely. Like, people talk about nervous system regulation, and it doesn't mean that we're never going to spiral.
Of course.
Or like feel unworthy, right? It's just mm-hmm. like, maybe you come back to it. You mm-hmm. come back to your true self or adult self a little bit quicker than last time.
Yeah. Or if it's always sort of present there a little bit, it never goes away completely, you know?
Yeah. And it's like how you react to it might be different. Right. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, oh, this part is coming up. And I think it's good as well to be open and honest with who you're dating, because mm-hmm. then you can see, is this person willing to be open to my needs? Because maybe you have a specific need around communication. Mm-hmm. How do they react to that? And it's like, if you have an emotional flashback or you have something big come up, how are they responding to your emotions? And especially it's like, if you want to have kids with someone, it's like kids are also very unpredictable and have many, many, many needs. And if someone isn't willing to be kind and loving to whatever is present within you, they're not going to be loving toward your children. Like, I think it's very good to be like, these are my needs. Can you meet them or not? And I think just having that open and honest dialogue and then having those tools for when it does get triggered.
Yeah, but the problem is that you have to be so far along in your healing to where you'll be able to act on that, right? Because I just think about yes. for years and years and years, it's like, sure, I could know that consciously. And if they were to respond yes. poorly and not give a shit about me sharing that, I still would have stayed. So it's like, you know, sometimes that means yeah. nothing until we get to a certain place where we have that ability to be able to actually do that, right?
Yes. So. Yes. That is where the somatic work really starts mm-hmm. to come in as well. It's like mm-hmm. once we heal enough of mm-hmm. the origin of that abandonment wound or your mother or father wound or, you know, just the trauma of that, that's when it will start to become more manageable, where your body will actually scream at you to leave, or you'll mm-hmm. start to feel very anxious because you're like, mm-hmm. actually, this person isn't meant for me. Mm-hmm. And I've healed enough of my abandonment wound where the pain of staying in this relationship is actually now bigger than yep. the pain of my abandonment.
Of leaving.
And that yep. is something to celebrate. Mm-hmm. Like people want to throw, also a caveat to this, people want to throw medication or tools or even somatic tools at this dysregulation. And it's like, what if this dysregulation is telling you this person is not in alignment anymore? Something feels mm-hmm. off. What if we can tune into that and actually mm-hmm. learn a lot of wisdom of like, hey, my body was actually never wrong. Like, what if my body knew what was right for me all along?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the curiosity component. I'm curious about your friendship breakup.
Yeah, that was really painful.
How long of a friendship was it?
So we were friends for 4 years uh-huh. and it just like stopped working. Like she ultimately was saying statements of like, I want friends who can help me expand 10 times more than
what does that mean?
And that's my question exactly. And it kind of put me into a state of dysregulation and put me in a state of almost like proving, and it would cause like, I just felt like nothing was ever up to her standards or good enough. And that's when, like, when she started saying those things, and she told me, like, I thought, like, okay, I'm gonna get back to my words. I'm like, so many thoughts. So last year I started to notice a lot of fawning around her. So I was intentionally working on healing that pattern. And then once I started to heal that pattern, the dynamic shifted. And she was like, I felt like you were always a yes person. I felt like you said that you were extroverted, but now you're more introverted. But it's really like, I just felt unsafe in the dynamic, I think, like as time went on. And then she would want me to share more things with her, but I just didn't feel safe in order to do that. Like I just, and once I did tell her something, she just like blew up and was like, I'm fed up. And that was just kind of like how it ended.
Like
and
you shared yes, a concern, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. She did say a comment when she was triggered about me, and it was really painful. And I at first was like, are you like joking? Like she said that I was really selfish, and I was like, what? Like my best friend would think that I'm selfish? Like, and then I was like trying to see like where was she coming from, and she barely said anything back, and then she just like went to bed, and then that was it. And then the next day I was just a little bit withdrawn because I was still like in shock and trying to get the courage of like even saying, hey, like I'm really hurt by this. And then once I finally mustered up the courage, like after being a little bit withdrawn, she was really triggered and felt really abandoned. So then once I said like, hey, what you said
hurt my feelings,
really hurt my feelings, then she blew up. And then that was just kind of like it. And I could have definitely shared more of like things that were bothering me, but I just didn't feel safe to do it. And it just felt like there was just always these expectations on me, and almost like just like criticisms very frequently. And I just got to a point where we were living together in Panama, and then it just got to a point where I was like, then like I went out with some friends and she was like really upset. There was a miscommunication. I tried explaining things, and then it just like, it was just not good. And then she was like, this isn't working. I think we should, you know, leave this lease a bit early. And then we did, and she kind of like escalated and was like, I don't feel emotionally safe here anymore. And so then I was like, yeah, like me either. And then I booked a flight back to Ohio. And yeah,
that was it.
Yeah, I think she really triggered the essence of a little bit of honestly both my parent wounds. And it really has caused me to confront a lot of that. But I just knew like the difference was this time after doing a lot of this healing work and going abroad again, solo, I learned like, wow, how much more capable I am and how much more secure I feel in myself. Like it was really painful. And at times it did felt like I was dying because it touched those young wounds. And I was like, I know I'm going to get through this. Because I also like, when you heal from toxic relationships, at the time, it feels so painful. And it's like, I went through that. I know I can get through this. And I really love my life in Mexico. I love the friendships I've cultivated. And I'm just honestly grateful that we let each other go. And I'm grateful for the time that we did have together because we made incredible memories. Like we both helped each other a lot. I just think we outgrew each other. And she was just looking for maybe something different in a friend, and that is like okay.
So what do you want to promote or push or share?
Yeah, so right now I have I don't know when this is going to be launched or published, but I am going to do a free masterclass where we start to do somatic tools on helping you to feel safe in your body, do some of that adult self work where you feel more anchored in that securely attached self. And then I'm also doing some somatic tools to help heal that fear of abandonment. And this is going to be my free Healing Your Fear of Abandonment masterclass on July 15th.
July 15th. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to release it this week. So
wonderful.
Yeah. Well, perfect. Well, thanks, girly. This was great.
Yeah. Thanks.